So, Berto, let's talk about Black Mirror Season 4, Episode 4, Hang the DJ. What do you say?
Hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ. I used to think it was I'm the DJ.
I'm the DJ, I'm the DJ. Well, that makes more sense, honestly.
Yeah, because I never had paid attention to the lyrics when I was a kid, so I just thought it was a song about he wanted to be the DJ. I'm the DJ. I'm the DJ.
But I remember when I first heard the song in the mid-80s, I was like, hang the DJ?
Burn down the disco.
Why would you want to hang the... And panic on the streets of Birmingham.
Well, and especially because most of the lyrics, you know, as a kid, I would have heard it in Colombia, and his thick accent, I probably wouldn't have understood most of the lyrics anyways, right? So I was like, well, there's a lot of London, but I wouldn't even know what Birmingham is, right? Later in the song, he repeats 20 times, I'm the DJ. So I conclude it's a song about him wanting to be a DJ.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm not a DJ, nor would I want to hang anyone who's a DJ. And I'm a therapist and a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda. I carry a bag with some old vinyl records, and I play them side by side in clubs.
At least that's better than modern DJs who just press a button on their Apple Macintosh. This episode was directed by Tim Van Patten, who has directed some of the best TV shows of all time.
I thought you meant our podcast episode was direct. I'm like, we have a director coming for this episode?
Yeah, Tim Van Patten is over here on the couch.
Hi, Tim.
And he's going to...
Hello.
He's going to be finally giving us some pointers on...
Welcome. Stay a while. Listen.
Tim Van Patten has directed some of the best TV shows of all time. Some of my favorites. Boardwalk Empire, Game of Thrones.
Nice.
The Pacific, which is a war TV show. The Sopranos, which
nice.
Is awesome. Rome.
Wow.
Have you ever watched Rome?
Oh, I love Rome.
I've watched it like 4 times.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's me and The Sopranos, which I've watched like 6 times.
Deadwood.
I've never seen Deadwood, actually.
The first season and a half is pretty good. The Wire.
Oh, one of my favorites, too.
Sex and the City.
One of them, I never seen it.
Yeah. And Touched by an Angel, like back in the day. Among various other TV shows.
I was touched by an angel.
Yeah. Written by Charlie Brooker. He's the main creator of Black Mirror. Stars Georgina Campbell, who plays Amy, and she looks exactly like Rosario Dawson.
I know. And so I know she doesn't look like Halle Berry, but did you ever watch that movie that everyone hated, but that I loved in a bad way?
Monsters
43
Ball?
43. No, I love that movie. No, 43 and a half or whatever. 43.
No.
It's a movie. It's a funny movie, a skit movie that everyone hated. It's rated one of the worst movies on Rotten Tomatoes. There's a skit with Stephen Merchant and Halle Berry where they're going on a date.
Oh.
And so even though these are completely different people, in my head, when I saw the episode and when I think of the episode, all I can picture is Stephen Merchant and Halle Berry.
This is the second time Stephen Merchant's come up on this podcast in this month.
Because, no, I mentioned that the guy looks like Stephen Merchant.
Oh.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like Stephen Merchant.
No, but I know, not like...
He's a white guy.
Not literally, but if you step back, close your eyes, turn around, he does.
Georgina Campbell's been at a bunch of TV shows, and I went on the internet to see if other people thought she looked like Rosario Dawson, and of course, lots of people think she looks like a young Rosario Dawson.
Yeah.
She's coming up, she plays lead in a new TV show coming up about early Superman called Krypton.
What?
There's a TV miniseries.
That's crazy.
Yeah, maybe a Netflix miniseries coming out called Whoa. Krypton, which, you know.
How is that different from the one they had before?
I think this takes place on, I don't know.
On
but
Krypton?
I'm thinking the whole thing takes place on Krypton.
But he was a baby. He was like
But it
newborn.
Gives like the, I think it, because, you know, there's a whole, correct me if I'm wrong, comic book backstory to the whole blow up of the planet thing. And, you know.
Well, I'm sure there, I don't know, because I don't follow the DC comics.
Oh, I thought you did.
No, I like those heroes, but I never read the comics.
You didn't read Dark Knight or any of those?
I mean, sure. Okay. I've read some of the main Batman ones, and I've certainly read The Death of Superman. And when I was a kid, I owned comics, but I never, I never knew all the plot lines and stuff. I mean, they've been around for 70 years, right?
But even in the movies, there's a...
But in the movies, I know the movies.
There's an implication of... There's an interesting backstory to the whole Krypton scenario.
Yeah, all I was saying is that he was an unborn and then newborn child in Krypton, so I didn't get it.
And Frank is played by Joe Cole, who has been on several TV shows, but the only TV show I remember him from, and I didn't realize it until halfway through the episode, is Peaky Blinders. Have you seen that TV show?
I have seen one episode, yeah.
The first two seasons, I think, are pretty good. After that, it gets a little out of control.
And he was also in Extras. He played the agent for Ricky Gervais.
The plot. Frank and Amy meet on an online date. It's seemingly their first online date they've ever had. It feels very familiar to modern times. You know, they meet in a restaurant. They're nervous. They've been set up by an online date, blah, blah, blah. And they have a meet cute in the classic romantic comedy sense. They have good chemistry. They're making jokes. You can relate to both of them. You think these are two interesting quality people.
And there's an odd moment right off the bat.
Right. Where they are like, can we eat each other's food?
Yeah, because they're like, oh, you got the such and such? Oh, I got the, ooh, I would love to taste that. And she's like, oh, are we allowed to?
Yeah, they both look over and there's a shadowy figure.
A bouncer looking guy
who seems to be observing them, making sure that they're following some set of rules that they don't really understand. And they also both have this personal assistant coach. It's like a computer. It's like the version of like a smartphone or something.
It's hilarious. Like, it's like in the future, they expect people to walk around with a little electronic device everywhere they go that talks to them.
Yeah. And also we learn that in this world, there's walls. Like this community is walled.
And roofs and windows.
No, it's like there's this giant wall that is surrounding this community.
Which at this point I took as they've gone on a retreat of some sort to find love.
Right. For the first bit of maybe half of the episode, I was like, so they lived in some kind of weird world. But then at some point, they say something like, well, we don't know what's beyond the wall. They say that.
And they sort of give it away. I mean, they sort of don't have it be a very big reveal in the end because they start giving it away along the way, right?
I didn't know at all.
Oh, really? Because he says early on.
What if this is a simulation?
He says like, well, have you considered, because they've got all our data on this thing. They know who we are, what we like, what we don't like. What's stopping them from just simulating us? And so there's one. And the second one, which I thought was the full giveaway, is when they're first throwing stones and she goes, hey, does yours ever go more or less than four?
Yeah.
And that was what I was like, oh, okay.
Right. Well, but Black Mirror would not be beyond, you know, dropping in a red herring, you know, to throw you off the scent, you know? And so.
But they would definitely need to explain that then.
Right. Yeah. But. So what I was thinking was, well, I didn't know, honestly. Yeah. I was like, when I saw the end, I was completely...
I see.
I mean, were you surprised at least?
No.
You were like, oh, this is a simulation for a dating app?
Well, no, I certainly didn't know exactly who was simulating what, that there were 9,000 or whatever, 1,000 of them. And I certainly didn't know that back in the real world, they were on normal, quote unquote, normal but futuristic smartphones about to also meet each other. I didn't know that, of course, but I did know before the reveal that, like, okay, they're definitely in a simulation.
I didn't. I mean, I think I thought that there was a possibility, but that was not what I thought. I don't know what I thought, but I was, you know, when they finally revealed it, I was like, holy mackerel.
I'll tell you what I sort of assumed, maybe past the halfway point, is that the two of them were in some facility that you go to for couples therapy or something.
Oh, interesting.
And that they were seeing what could have happened if things, you know, this, that, and the other.
Actually, now that I remember, I think I might have thought something similar to that too. Like something, like I was thinking maybe they're hooked up to something. And these are real people, but they're in a simulator.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Okay.
It was a total twist for me that it was just a simulation running in a phone running 1,000 times, right? Like that was
in the
that
blink of a second.
Yeah,
yeah. The Frank and Amy, they check their expiry date. Is expiry, is that a British way of saying
expiry date? Yeah, right.
Expiration
must be.
Yeah, expiry date. 12 hours, and so they realize. So we learn that in this system that they've seemingly signed up for voluntarily, they have to date for the system has said you only need to date for 12 hours.
And actually, at that moment in the story, I thought that there was going to be this twist where we're going to watch the episode, and at the end of the 12 hours, it wasn't that their date was expiring, it's that they were expired.
Yeah, it's funny when you watch a Black Mirror, it's like, yeah. Where's the twist?
What's the twist?
Yeah. They separate in the morning and they're like, okay, well, I guess they seem like they sort of regret having to say goodbye, but you know,
they had a sweet night.
Yeah.
They regretted not having sex.
Yeah. And they separate in the morning and then they date a bunch of others. Amy dates what I think is supposed to be like her perfect man, right?
He's on the surface anyway.
Yeah. He's good looking. He's got nice abs. He is refined. He's not weird. He's not nerdy. He's very confident.
And he takes her to town in the sack.
Yeah. And Frank dates this really mean woman with no sense of humor.
They're off to a bad start from word one.
Yeah. Right. And so this is when I thought, well, if they're in a real world, if this is a real, like, if these are real people, I was thinking, is this sort of comment on how a computer could figure out how to manipulate you to fall in love, essentially? It's like send you on a date with someone who you are, maybe you're compatible with, see how you do for 12 hours, and then make you live with someone for a year.
Yeah.
Because like one of the things that I talk with a lot of clients about is they will talk about when they're in a bad relationship, they don't talk about someone, you know, many people ago. They think about the last person they dated.
Yeah.
Just before.
Right. You know,
the one that got away just before. Because usually that's someone that they didn't see all the way through, and it's someone that's very recent for them, you know? And so I was wondering if that's what they're doing.
Well, I also thought part of the reason I started thinking, yeah, this must be a simulation, is because when it's like a year, but they don't show us, do they have a job? Are they just at this place for a year?
Like, I was thinking maybe in this world they don't have to work.
It could be like universal automatic income or something.
Right. They date a bunch of other people, but then the computer eventually matches Frank and Amy back together again.
Oh, sorry. There was a moment that I actually thought Matrix-like. I thought, oh, this could be a thing where they don't have to work, and computers are always running simulations on humans, non-barbarically, but like trying all sorts of different combinations and shit.
So now they're back together, and they're having a great time. And they make a promise that they're not going to check their expiration date. And they're seemingly together for a while. We don't really know how long, but they're really happy. But Frank's getting kind of worried. He's kind of worried, like, wait, how much time do I – I'm really falling in love with her.
Yeah.
How much time do I have left with Amy? I'm really worried. So he secretly checks the expiration date, and it says they have 5 years. Right. And you see – and this is where the beauty of writing, directing, acting comes in, is the face – you know – there's so many options in terms of writing what sort of face he's going to make.
Right.
5 years could be like, yay, or it could be like, oh. But like the beauty of Black Mirror is in his face, because I'm watching his face and I'm like, what's in his brain? And they don't really make it clear.
Right.
But he's sort of looking at it and you can sort of see him kind of smile, but also be a little sad because he's like, oh, wow, that's great. At least it's not like one more day. But that's kind of a bummer that it's only 5 years. But 5 years is a long – you could kind of see the gears turning in his head.
And in human – you know, humans are so poor at long-term that you don't feel that pain yet. You're like, yeah, five – okay, well, that sucks. But yeah, 5 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you could sort of see those gears turning.
Yeah.
And – but then for some reason, it starts to recalibrate, you know, that the coach is saying, oh, recalibrating – 1 year, recalibrating.
Oh my God.
3 months. And he's
so
like, stop
stressful.
It. There's always a reason. Recalibrating. And he's getting upset. And then it says just like a few hours or something.
Yeah.
And then they're hanging out and he's upset. And she's like, what's wrong? And he tells her, and he, like, I checked the expiration date. She's like, well, how much time do we have? He's like, well, at first it said 5 years, but then it recalibrated because I looked at it and it said we only have like another hour. And she gets really upset and she breaks up with him like right on the spot because, she, you know, she's like, yeah. You broke our promise. Why did, and you might have broke the system so that we can't see each other anymore. Right. I can't believe you did that. And he's begging her to stay. He's like, let's go over the wall. Let's run. And she runs away. They date other people. They're unhappy. You know, seemingly, Frank's very unhappy. The computer then tells Amy that she's been matched with her perfect mate. And she, but the computer also says, and there, she's going to meet her perfect mate tomorrow.
Yeah.
But then the computer also says, you get to say goodbye to one person. She says, Frank, I want to say goodbye to Frank.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they have a final date. They decide to go over the wall. They climb the wall and enter a room with thousands of other couples who look just like them. We learn that Frank...
There's 999 other couples.
Yeah, but I looked very closely and I couldn't see any other people within their field of vision anyway. We learn that Frank and Amy were just one simulation among 1,000 Franks and 1,000 Amys, and 998 of the 1,000 actually rebelled and went over the wall. And we see the real Frank and the real Amy in a bar looking at their phone, realizing that on a dating app, they have found a 99.8% match with someone across the room. And again, more excellent Black Mirror writing. You hear Hang the DJ in the background, and they're looking at each other, and they're like, oh. And then they're like, oh, hey. And then they're like, wait, 99.8%. That means we might be in a relationship soon for a long time, which means good and bad. And, you know, and then they get a little sad.
Yeah.
And then they sort of look at each, you know, they're looking at each other. And then she gets a smile, and she just starts walking up to him. Yeah. I get chills just thinking about that scene. It's just like the payoff. And again, stupider writers and directors and producers, honestly, would pressure the writers. You got to have them kiss, or you got to have them talk, or you got to flash forward. Like, how do we know? Like, she's just walking up. You're just going to end it. Like, people got to know what happened. You know, it's like, no,
nope.
Like, and then it cuts to black, and then Panic by the Smiths comes into full stereophonic sound, and it sounds off. Now we thought this was our favorite episode of season four. Possibly one of the best Black Mirror episodes.
Yes, it's in my top three now.
Some trivia here. The idea of Hang the DJ was about rejecting the music that's being played for you. And so you rebel against it.
Yeah, well, so halfway through the episode, I never knew what the song Hang the DJ was about. But halfway through the episode, I asked myself, why would they call this? And then it immediately hit me because it's like, oh, of course, because, you know, a DJ chooses for you, right? And if you're not happy with what the DJ is choosing, you would want the DJ to get kicked out or hung in the extreme.
Right.
So then I got it. I'm like, oh, okay, hang the DJ. Hang these people choosing for us, damn it.
Right. So when Amy throws the coach into the pool, she's hanging the DJ.
And then I actually read about the song today because I was like, yeah, what was the song about? And I went on the Wikipedia and stuff. And that was literally what it was, right? It was the Smiths were upset, or at least Morrissey was upset that all this bad shit was happening in the news. He was quoting that Chernobyl was on the news, and then a second later, some happy song that they're supposed to dance to or whatever. So it was this feeling of like, all this bad shit happening everywhere, and none of this music relates to our lives. And so like, and then so the rest of the song is burn the disco, hang the DJ.
Yeah, it was specific, according to lore, it was specifically a Wham song.
Yeah, but Mar said, oh, because I read more lore. I just literally just did 10 seconds of research today. But Johnny Marr said that he's not so sure that story was real. But it was, what was the Wham song?
I can't remember. It was one of their lesser, it wasn't one of their top five.
Yeah, the story was like they were a news item about Chernobyl. And then right after that, Wham comes on, and they're
This episode is kind of like Logan's Run, the movie.
Yeah,
I thought that was because, you know, you got young people and running away over the wall.
Right.
Anyway, expiration dates and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, so, you're right. Very much so.
Yeah. I probably inadvertently, you know, because
they must have been fans, right?
Maybe, I don't know. So we got some good and some bad stuff. Let's talk about the good stuff. What can you say that's good?
I actually loved the chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah, it was so believable. Like, arguably, if that chemistry was half as good, this episode
it doesn't work.
Would fall apart.
The whole thing hinges on you as the viewer believing that, yeah, that's gotta be a better deal than all those other ones they showed us.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, like, on his side, I sort of felt bad because I'm like, well, he's sort of getting the raw end of the deal here. She's getting, like, just a fuck marathon. But still, they show us her as a shell outside her body, you know, all these things.
But I thought that was good in terms of gender because it would be tempting to not do that, right? It'd be tempting to be like, well, let's pander to the men and let's give him
he
like
sows his oats.
Yeah, and let's give her someone who's just like a abusive asshole.
Right.
But instead they're like, we'll give her, you know, arguably a better guy.
Yeah.
And she throws herself at him.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, he's like,
I found that it's better to have sex on it. She's like, yes.
Yeah. She's like, okay, yeah. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. Like, that the writers are really.
And he wasn't a dick. I mean, he wasn't very talkative. And he did, I mean, it's funny. He cleared his throat, wasn't it? Or,
no, he went,
right. And that she's like, that drives me nuts.
Right. And so it's supposed to give you like the common dating experience of like, I don't know why I don't like this person, but I don't.
Right.
You know, I'm just not into it.
And then a lot of the other ones they showed us, there didn't seem to be anything specifically wrong with them.
Right.
She just wasn't connecting.
I guess one of the bad things about this episode, now that I think about it, is with her, when she got that guy for a year, that was perhaps more realistic and sort of an okay simulation. You know, hooking him up with someone who was so arguably bad for him, you know?
Yeah.
I wish they would have made it more subtle, you know, like someone that he could kind of get along with, but, you know, just wasn't Amy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just, yeah, I like her, but...
That's a good point.
You know?
So, now,
and they didn't really depict any other relationship in depth after that, you know.
This could have been the simulation that was set to extreme, you know.
Right, and so that's the other question of just like, what were the other simulations like? Were they all exactly the same with the same set of dates after that?
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I thought that the chemistry was great, very believable. The ending I thought was perfect. I loved, yet again, the looks between the two of them at the end.
Totally.
One of the interesting things about this episode is in other episodes, they make you really care about the simulations,
right?
The simulated AIs.
Right.
And in this episode, they don't really portray it in a way that makes you feel like, oh, they're all dead now.
Well, they let us off the hook as viewers because... they have calm resignation when they're up in the
right.
When they. It's not like they see everyone and they all start freaking out.
Ah!
We get this sense, right?
That'd be funny. They're just like a thousand voices crying out in terror.
That's right. I actually got the sense, and they gave us enough hints that the simulations are sort of
self-aware,
but also glitchy, like. For example, who in the real world wouldn't question, not the 10th time, not even the third time, but like maybe the second time that a rock skipped exactly four times? And then let alone after hundreds, and you're like, okay, what the fuck, right? And so they give us a sense that...
And she even says that at the end. She's like, I think we're in a simulation, actually, and I think we're supposed to go over the
exactly.
wall.
And so these are not actually... 100% well-rounded humans.
But the way they portray it, these people have emotions, they care about their lives, care about their love lives.
Yeah, but there's things like they don't care where they're at or they don't notice that they can't leave.
Yeah, maybe
the bouncers are there to kill them.
Or jobs or anything.
Right. Yeah. So that's where I got the sense like it's the thing where to the simulation, it feels as real as the simulation is made to feel, right? To us humans, the real world feels real because it feels real to humans.
Maybe what the show should have done, which of course would have ruined it, but is they should have said like, you are needed in another simulation soon. We're gonna, you know what I mean? We're gonna wipe you, but your soul's gonna go to another. I like this episode because it's as with Archangel, it's very familiar to contemporary dating.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of elements to this where you're just like, wow, this is like very contemporary.
Right.
It's sort of like how 15 minutes, what was that episode called? 15 Million Merits. The 15 Million Merits episode, as I was watching it, I'm like, what in the world is that? Like, where are they? Like, right. They're underground. They're on these bikes. They're playing video. Like,
this one felt grounded in.
Well, no. 50 Million Merits, even though it looked and was like, this, where are we? That's when I fell in love with Black Mirror, because as I was watching it, I was like, somehow this is touching on something inside of my current life. This
you're
metaphor.
Saying that they're able to, even when they place it in a very odd setting, you're still, okay.
You know, like with Nosedive, it's like a very strange world, but you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
Right away, this feels oddly familiar, liking everyone and being worried about, you know, Yelp ratings and stuff. Also, one of the best things about this episode is you can easily recommend it to people who have never seen Black Mirror.
Oh yes,
if you're worried, I don't know if this person's into tech or sci-fi or Twilight, or I don't know if they could really stomach, you know, a crocodile.
Well, and I would say even more so than the Star Trek one, right? Because this one, you don't have to be into tech, like you said, you don't have to be into sci-fi.
Yeah, it's a rom-com.
Exactly.
Yeah. And understandable, nothing's too freaky, and in the end, it's like, oh, you know, it's not a huge leap.
Right.
You know, and so you could absolutely, and it has a happy ending, you know, and you could absolutely recommend it.
And then you recommend it to someone, they're like, they all died in the end.
What about some bad stuff about this episode that we could say? What are some downsides, things you would have changed? What do you think? I'm talking because you aren't talking, and when there's dead space in the episode, it's hard.
I'm finding it hard, man.
Okay, just say that. So
I'm finding it hard.
There's no dead space.
I'm finding it hard.
Or at least just go,
I'm finding it hard. Can we harmonize? I'm finding it hard.
Okay, let's take a break, and when we get back, let's pull this episode from this nosedive. All right, we're back from the break. Join the Facebook fan group. It's a fun place where even Birdo goes sometimes.
Yay.
And joins famous patron Linjin. The Facebook fan group, they have lively discussions about various things, and I never go there because I want people to feel free to say whatever they want. And Birdo, you know, he doesn't mind being insulted, so you can insult
That's
him.
Right.
Also, tell a friend about the podcast. If you're in the field, you're in a training program or a consultation group, tell the people about the podcast. That's a good way for us to spread the word. Review us on iTunes. That's another way you can help sort of spread the word. Also become a patron, obviously. So what are some bad things we could say?
If I'm being nitpicky, really nitpicky, I'm going to say things like this. All right. Well, in reality, the simulation maybe was overly complicated.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you think about what the simulation would have been trying to do, it's like, well, we're trying to see how these people's personalities would interact with other personalities. Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
This point didn't occur to me till late in my thinking about it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Which is basically like, well, but do you have to simulate a whole world? Like, actually a world that is not familiar to a human being.
Well, not only that, but it's like, it only tests, if you really just looked at it, it's like, well, what exactly are we testing here?
Yeah.
We're testing whether or not they will go over a wall. Like, that's not what we want to know.
Right.
We don't want to know if these guys are going to go against, like, the government together.
Right.
And what we want to know is, so what I was thinking was, it would be a lame TV show, but a better simulation is, you take a Frank and you take an Amy and you put them in a world where there's an online dating service, and there's 100 other people in that community.
Yeah,
and you don't have bouncers. You just have a wall that they just can't get over.
Yeah,
and they just, you know, well, I don't know. You just can't go over the wall. I don't know what's over there.
And they keep dating, and
then
on,
and then they date all 100 people in that community. Yeah. And who do they choose to marry is the thing. Like, cause that's really what a dating app is supposed to find. Or an even sort of more precise thing. Cause as we get into this tech, it's like eventually I'm guessing, I don't know, 75 years from now, we'll be able to actually do something like this, exactly like this, you know what I mean? With actual almost facsimiles of human beings inside of a phone, you know?
Yeah.
And a better way would be, you run 1,000 different simulations of some kind of, you know, sandbox situation like that. And then the thing that pops out at you on your phone is not like 99.8% match, but we ran 1,000 simulations just now. And in 55% of them, they chose to be together for over a year.
Yeah.
In 20%, they actually decided to be together for over 5 years. And in 3%, they actually got married.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can kind of gauge like, oh, okay. So based on the simulations, like I have, or another stat would be like, and in 90%, even if you break up after a week, you don't really, your simulations didn't regret having been in a relationship.
Right. So that's a more granular result, which you don't realize they could have gotten by double clicking on the 99%. I will say, as devil's advocate, I think, you know, maybe we are thinking, well, this would be an improvement. But maybe the developers of this system thought, guys, it's so impossible to predict who you'll be happy with. But I have a theory. What if we run some simulations and the thing is, you know, what is love? Love is so hard to define. But we're going to define success here as if you're willing to go against everything for that one person, then we'll give you a higher rate of success.
But what it doesn't show is the other couple in the bar, hang the DJ's playing.
Yeah.
Those people are extremely law-abiding, scaredy cats.
Yeah.
And so they will not match with a single person they ever meet on this app, because they're the kind of people who will never go over the wall.
I see what you're saying. But you're thinking that the AI representations are actual good representations of their law behavior. And I'm saying,
well, that's the point.
They cut all those corners and basically.
Yeah, I get it. I understand. I understand why they designed it.
We're trying to justify a show.
That's fine. Yeah. Let's see.
In general, I agree with that.
Yeah. So the other bad thing is there was no queer or gay stuff at all, except for that.
No, she did. She had one.
So that one very brief sort of second where it's like, oh, she dated a woman for a while, but. I kept looking around. I was like, all the couples were hetero. Like, and then I was like, well, maybe there's a point to that. But at the end of the episode, I was like, there wouldn't, because they lived in a community of other people who were dating and going out, right? And like that one couple that got married eventually, or, you know, fully mashed or whatever. And it's like,
talk about unnecessary additional coding into the simulation.
Well, right. So that could have been the reason. It's just like, well, why, we don't need that for this simulation for another two people. Everyone in the
community. I was actually referring to like the scene with the couple saying how great it is, how the service works.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, is that necessary for the simulation?
Well, they must have ran enough simulations in the past where they're like, well, all the simulations give up.
It's Matrix, right?
Right.
Like, actually, I will, again, defending, playing devil's advocate to my own point, the way you would probably end up doing this, the way that machine learning is going, is you actually wouldn't have control over, like, you wouldn't be programming a script.
Right.
What would actually happen is you'd have some models that recreate the characters, and then you set it to play. You press play, and you actually have no idea what's going to happen. And shit just happens. And randomly, two of the characters say, oh, we're happy, and it works, or whatever, right?
Well, and you have to match that up, correlate that with reality.
Yeah.
So you'd have to run simulations and then measure actual human beings against those simulations, and then and then see which right. correlate with like them staying together right. for a long time.
But it, but still, like to your point, like first of all, you would think you would have wanted to put the same two people, not in a 12-hour test, but rather all the sorts of stressful situations that you have to deal with, kids,
right.
stressful jobs,
yeah.
lack of sleep, cancer, disease, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know? Instead of this extremely weird world that it doesn't correlate with the real one. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. Dating sites that claim they, okay. So this, it, I, right away I was like, oh, this is sort of a play on dating sites and their claim that they can match you
right.
with a certain accuracy.
Right, right, right.
and they have, you know, cause that's the whole thing the coach has. It's just like, well, you know, we have algorithms and we figure out, and there's a, there's been a ton of quote unquote science and research into this, but they always keep their research close to the vest.
Right.
And when that, you actually look into the science, it's extremely hard to predict if two people are going to actually work out or not, is,
yeah.
is how the actual science works. Imagine.
I guess I just realized something though. Maybe again, playing devil's advocate and what, like just trying to salvage the plot here. Potentially they've realized over their years of research that it all boils down to if you cannot see in the numbers the spark after 12 hours, there'll never be a spark, you know, something along those lines, right? So they're like, yeah, look, we're going to pit these two simulated personalities together for 12 hours. And then for the rest of the simulation, we're going to have them in all sorts of random other kind of controlled cases and stuff. If those 12 hours were not enough, then it's low probability.
Or another way is you put them together for 12 hours and you ask the simulation at the end, do you want to date this person again? Yes or no?
But see, the simulation won't know.
But they well, they had an opinion at the end. I mean, they were like, yeah, I think I'd like to see that person again.
But they didn't really know until they knew.
Yeah, yeah. There was a. I loved the moment where, at the very end, when everything sort of becomes revealed, and you're just like, you have this simultaneous happiness, like, oh, they're in real life, and they're really gonna meet in the real world. But oh my God, all those people are just simulations, and they just died. Like, I actually had sadness because the characters we've been following
right.
just died.
Right, right.
They just got deleted,
right.
you know? And that's a very Black Mirror thing to do to me.
But if you think about what, imagine the equivalent of pleasure for an AI entity. If ultimate pleasure was fulfilling the run sequence, then they just orgasmed infinitely, right?
So there are a few questions here that I want to ask you, Berto. What if there was a system that, because at the beginning of the episode, I was like, oh, maybe they created, maybe this is like post-apocalyptic. So that's what I actually thought, was like the world blew up, and in order to save the human race, to make them mate, they figured out this, they, you know, created this perfect world where, in fact, I think they even said that. I think like beyond the wall, you know, they've ran out of food or something like that. Or it's just a wild world out there. And I thought, well, maybe they've created this coach system to actually help people mate because people stopped having kids or something.
Right.
So, but here's the question, Bruno. What if you could sort of voluntarily go to this island? And you would have this system where it was just like you agreed, you signed over, you said, "Okay, I'm gonna follow the rules." And this, you know, algorithm that might be, you know, slightly better than the one we have today, it does this kind of
right.
full control over your life. Might that result in more likelihood of long-term satisfaction relationship or not? What do you think?
Ha. Well, I was going to, when I thought you were going with, would you do it? And I'd be like, sign me the fuck up. But the reason.
Oh, really?
Well, but the reason is because I would feel no obligation to stay together after the island, you know? So the question you ended up with is, do I think it would work?
No, I'm saying you got to stay. You sign up, you go, you got to stay. You can't just walk away.
Oh, that's a little different. I thought, well, like,
and
hey,
you have to comply. Like, if it says we've matched you with the perfect match, you're going to grow old together, you got to do it.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. That's hard, man. No way.
But what if it was like, all these testimonials, like, man, it really works.
No, freedom.
Got free
freedom.
Will. You want the free will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, what is happiness?
Well, but let me ask you another question. How do I ask this? So let's say you lived in an alternate Birdo life.
Yeah.
And you, because I don't know how to say this exactly, but let's say you lived in an alternate Birdo life.
Yes.
And you were having trouble finding somebody.
Yes.
And you were, you know.
I was depressed about it.
Yeah. You know, think of people that we know who date and they're just like, God, you know, it's just you get in one relationship. It's hard to find someone.
Absolutely.
You try them out for 6 months and then you find out. And then, but you can go to this island where it's just like.
Guaranteed
relationship at all times.
And potentially, and actually no, and they guarantee that after some amount of time, you'll find your perfect match and you'll be with them forever.
And lots of testimonials, and you don't have any choice.
Right.
And your partner doesn't have any choice.
Right, right.
Like, they got to stay with you.
Right.
Like, does that factor? You know, imagine that. Merito.
I could see that. But I guess what happens is, yes, I could totally understand that.
I could see people being like, the no free will thing, that kind of sucks. But guaranteed, because there's a lot of people who are dating who are like, what if I never meet anybody? What if I grow old alone?
Well,
you know?
I think for me, you know, you play video games like I do, and you've played Grand Theft Auto before.
Yeah.
Did you ever enable the cheat codes?
No.
Okay. So in any game where you get the cheat codes.
I'm an honest person, bro.
Right. In any game where you get the cheat codes, if the cheat codes break the game, meaning if they're too powerful, they will always be fun for a few minutes, maybe 10 minutes, maybe half an hour. And after that, you'll lose interest.
Totally. That's why I don't like them. Yeah.
Right. And the reason is because it takes away your free will in this weird kind of sideways way, right? The game having limits is what sort of makes your free will be meaningful.
Well, but this simulation on this island actually works that into it by making it so that you can't be with the person necessarily you want to be with for a long time. Do you know what I mean? Well, no, forget it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I get what you're saying. So it would ruin that for you.
Yeah, because like, look, I actually believe that it's very likely that there is no such thing as free will in the truest sense of the statement. But for us humans, it sure as hell feels as if we have free will. And I think that losing that feeling would be the last thing I would want.
I roll my eyes to statements like that because, you know, there's been a lot of talk on the internet about that and be like, no one has free will. Of course you have free will.
No, like, no, we have. Well, it depends what you mean, right?
Right. It depends on what you mean.
If what we mean is humans within a human context have the freedom, unless they're imprisoned or slaves, to make their choices of their own volition. Yeah, of course we do. If you mean, are you able to actually make a completely unpredictable choice of your choosing? Then that is an undecidable at best question.
Well, if your definition of free will somehow supersedes the organic nature of your brain, then yeah, of course you don't have free will.
Unfortunately, I think that most people, when they say humans have free will, they ultimately, especially because a lot of times it's kind of a religious thing.
Right.
They do mean ultimate free will.
Right. And but also on this flip side, the stoners who like to talk about, no one has free will, is because they like to say, like, there's research that, you know, shows that before you actually make a choice, there's like an impulse in the brain. And all I have to say is, like, you don't understand how brain science works. There's no fucking way that our current science knows how to measure such a thing. And two, how do you know that's not the beginning of free will?
No, I have no. Yeah, that is a what do you call it? Red herring, right?
And of course we are completely locked into our bodies and our impulses. Like, I don't have free will not to sleep at night. You know, I'll just fall asleep. I don't have free will not to drink water. Yeah. I don't have free will to avoid other human beings. I have needs that I need to fulfill, but I absolutely have free will. Now, they'll say, well, you know, when you meet someone, there's pheromones and it compels you. No, it doesn't. Like, one, if it does, we can't demonstrate that today. And two, I highly doubt that those kinds of things are like automatically programmed. Our decisions emerge from billions of factors within us that have to do with lots of things. Now, you could say that is not free will, but again, it depends on how you define free will.
That's the whole point. So like the reason, so I'm going by the Sam Harris line of argument. And the reason I actually think, because you think it's like, well, what's the point? It's such a pedantic thing to argue about. But the reason he brings it up is for a very humanistic reason, which is that a lot of us privileged folks in the world like to think, well, yeah, I'm privileged, but I mean, it's because of my hard work and my dedication that I have this big house and this car, and right? And we like to feel that way, right? And most of us feel like mistakes were bad luck, and when we succeeded, it's because we're so good.
Totally.
And then he points out, like, okay, so you didn't choose your genes, where you were born, who your parents were, what your parents said or did with you, what your teacher said or did with you.
Right.
You didn't choose what the car down the street was, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the way down to the last second of the last word that I said. And that is his line of reasoning.
Right.
And so when you go down that road, let alone if you go to the quantum physics and the understanding that there is maybe no decidable physics to the universe, all these things, then yeah, from that perspective, it's a ridiculous thing to say, I am who I am because I'm so good, and you are who you are because you didn't pull yourself up from your bootstraps.
Because of your choices, right. Right.
But yeah, that's exactly. Very different from saying, therefore, humans have no free will and right. Everything's irrelevant.
Right. Like, and to be even more precise, your political views are very predictable based on factors that we can measure with demographics. But not always predictive, so therefore, free
it's
will.
All curves. Well, but even you, so you would actually like the lack of free will, if you will, because you like to point out that so much of what we think is sort of biologic indoctrinated into us.
Right. So I'm not calling it free will per se. I mean, when I think free will, I think at any given moment, can I choose, you know?
Yeah.
Like, can I choose?
Does it feel like I have free will?
Yeah. Well, can I choose to end this podcast and never make another episode?
Yes.
Like, that's a conceivable choice.
Yes. And what someone would say, if we're going along non-pedantically with that, would say, like, the proof is in the pudding. I make choices I just chose to lift my hand.
Right. The free will I'm referring to is that. But do I have free will, so to speak, over, did I choose the language I speak? No. Did I choose my genes? No. Did I choose my political views? Not really.
Right.
You know, for me to have been a Republican based on, or a right winger or super conservative based on my background would have been extremely strange. Not necessarily my background, but like after going to college and being with all the people I was with, it would have been extremely strange. But I have friends who had the exact same background, and they are super fucking conservative, you know? So I'm influenced, you know?
Well, and even the question of what does it mean when we say, did I choose? What is I in this context? Is it, which part of your brain are you talking about?
Right. So, and that gets into consciousness and, you know, which there is a very viable argument for saying things like, there is no I, you are connected.
Yeah.
You know, you are connected to the world. When you isolate the I in a chamber, what do you call it? With no stimulation.
Oh, yeah. Deprivation.
Deprivation chamber. You start to lose your sanity because you no longer have your identity, which is connected to people and sounds and you know, anyway.
But the only thing I was trying to go with that is that irrelevant of the philosophy of it, I feel like I have free will.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing I would want to give up.
Interesting. Unless you were so desperate because you couldn't find anybody and you needed someone and this guaranteed.
Yeah, desperation could trump.
Because this island would guarantee you somebody, you know.
I suppose.
Yeah. Well, what it would get it?
Yeah, no. I suppose I may find myself giving that up.
I see. Another question here, Berto. See, what if there was an app that could run 1,000 simulations based on your personality? Would it work? You know, would would it work, do you think?
Oh, I think for the dating or for some aspects? I do think you could, I could easily imagine parts of my behavior, personality, the way I look, etc., being simulated for effect. As an example, we know this already with, you know, the apps that make us look older, right? They're not running simulations, but what they did is the simulations were already pre-run by having data fed into a model, right? Yeah. So we already do this in a way. We say, well, what would Kirk look like when he's older? Right? And we're not guessing. We're using data of what humans look like when they're older to estimate what you're going to look like when you're older. Similarly, you could imagine like, well, what would be the best haircut for me? And then you run simulations or you try a whole bunch of models and you evaluate them versus people's preferences or things. And then with personality, you could say like, well, what would be the most effective communication style for me or the tone of voice? How loud should I speak? You imagine a whole bunch of things that could be simulated.
Right. So that's what I was thinking was if you had this tech, there would be so many other things that would perhaps be even more useful.
Yeah.
Like you could even, I mean, I was sort of just brainstorming. I thought like two countries enter into a war and instead of actually killing people, you could just set a simulation of the battleground,
right?
And whoever wins, then they win the territory or something.
Yeah, because you're like, well, and actually the whole free will thing would enter there because you would say like, look, your scientists know, and I know, and my scientists know that these simulations predict very accurately. And you see, we just ran the simulation and you see that in the simulation, 99 times out of 100, we win.
Yeah.
And 70% of those, it's disastrous for you guys.
Right.
Do you want to physically go down this road?
Well, right. So there would have to be some rules of engagement that you'd have to be locked into a particular, you know, result. Or you could run the simulation to see whether or not you should proceed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would just, like, the way I would use, in fact, what are we saying? The military already runs simulations left and right trying to predict what's going to happen in a battle.
But if you actually had actual humans and civilians. Yeah. Anyway, another one would be starting a business. You could be like, you'd run 1,000 simulations of starting a business in that location and you would, you know, get sort of random people that fit the demographics and see if patrons actually, you know, eventually went to your store.
Right.
Or how should I present myself at a job interview?
Right.
Right. You could run simulations on different styles of responding to questions or something.
Right. Now, so the thing that's interesting is running simulations was a very 90s thing.
Yeah.
And early 2000s. Actually, no. 90s and 2000s. Running simulations will come back. But for now, it's all like you don't have to run simulations. You just have to look at the data you have available to you. And if you don't have the data, the question is not how can I run a simulation, but how can I acquire the data that I need? So a different way to look at it would be, well, okay, so if what I'm trying to do is decide on who's going to patronize my store on this corner, what I need is to find data about humans patronizing stores of similar types. And then that's essentially the simulation.
But they run simulations for like weather.
Yeah, and they still do, right?
And but, for like what would happen if when the ice caps melt completely, you know, they run a simulation.
Right. So what's happening is when they're training models now, it's flipped on its head a little bit. Instead of programming in all the parameters and then running a simulation, they're instead saying, well, nature already ran the simulations. They were real, but here's all the data of those simulations.
Yeah.
Now tell me what would happen based on the future.
Right. So, well, right. So, and I don't know this trend, but I imagine that with big data and with enough data, you don't need to run a simulation because you have enough real data.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, but at the same time, I do think that it might come back if you do end up with enough agents that seem human enough, or maybe at least animal enough or whatever, you could imagine, well, okay, well, we're going to set 1,000 of them to do something and we're going to, you know.
Because for the real Frank and the real Amy, you don't have any data yet because you haven't.
And in fact, and this is going to be a very interesting conundrum. you're always talking about how we can't really decide on a lot of genetic questions and things like this because it's unethical to do so, right? Mm-hmm. If were even possible.
Oh my God, that would be an awesome use of this tech.
Right.
Is like you can actually test evolution this way.
But here's what I'm going to say, which I'm sure you've thought about:
is it ethical?
What threshold did we cross where you were feeling bad for these people?
Right. That was my next question: was even this ethical to begin with?
Yeah, exactly.
And the other question that they don't answer in the show is, do the purveyors of, or do you know, does the real Frank and the real Amy know that this percentage was a result of 1,000 simulations of them instead of just like, this app just knows, you know, it just sort of figures out.
That's right.
You know, do they just say, it just sort of figures out. And then the real people behind the code are like, actually, we're running simulations of like, you know, if you met them on a video screen, you would think it's you. Yeah, you'd think they're very real.
And that's
which leads to another question of like, why not just date a simulation?
Right. Why? She says no. Okay, I'll just date your simulation.
I'll just date your like in the USS Callister.
Right. You're right. Exactly. And it is a very, very important question because right now, you know, if someone is born severely disabled, where for their lifetime, assuming it could be a short lifetime, but they will be a 1-year-old in terms of development, maybe 2 years, you know, like someone who's severely mentally disabled.
Okay.
They still have rights.
Yeah.
They're a person.
Yeah.
You can't just kill them or treat them poorly or put them in experiments and stuff.
No.
So it's going to get really odd when you have a simulation that is definitely way more capable than this real person. And you're claiming that this simulation has no rights and this person has rights.
Right.
Because it's going to be obvious that the only reason you're doing it is because one is made out of one substrate and the other one is a different substrate.
Right. Yeah. So it's a good, interesting question of just like, if you actually met these simulations and you're just deleting them or putting them through some pretty horrible experiences, is that ethical? And if you can do this, then surely some nerd is like, putting some people in some really horrible situations.
That's right. And then you could work around it in some ways by saying, look, by the point that we can actually simulate you to that degree, we've now transcended the part where we can back you up. So recreating you digitally is free, mm-hmm. give or take, right? So you never really have to die. We just reboot you. You're back or reload you, right? Restore the last checkpoint. In terms of pain, because you can say the next question is like, pain is real. Pain feels real. You could say, yeah, but we could either numb the pain down so you never feel more than a prick. You know, let's agree on what is an acceptable level of maximum pain. And you never really feel more than that. And on and on and on. So then you could say, well, that's not a human. I say, well, actually, on a day-to-day basis, I don't experience an excruciating amount of pain. And I don't die. So that is actually being human enough.
Yeah. Yeah. One question I had, and we'll close with this, is that did this simulation run, like one of the things that I thought of right away was like, well, wait, so how did these two apps sync up? Because they're across a bar from each other.
Yeah.
Surely they didn't point their phone at that one person. Surely this is just an app. Well, we don't know.
I think it pre-matched them. They were meeting each other there because she's like,
they were not meeting at that
was in the simulation.
Right. So now again, we don't know.
Right. We don't
but know. But from what I was interpreting from when they go to the bar with the song Hang the Panic by the Smiths in that bar was this app randomly chose them, you know?
I see.
And so it's like, how many other simulations with other people are happening in that room? And is it just happening on their phone? Because that's the way it made it look, right?
Yeah, it made it look like it was on the phone.
The phone had enough software power to simulate those people in the blink of an eye.
And some of that is interesting because I think temporarily people are going to feel like, I don't want my information in the cloud. But eventually, like already all our photos are in the cloud.
Yeah,
so.
And then the other thing I was hoping, and I kept rewatching the end and pausing, what I thought would have been really cool, and I don't put it past them that they just put it there and I didn't see it, was everyone else in the bar were their dates. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, is that, do you caught that?
I couldn't, I couldn't see it. So, cause I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if all these people walked into the bar that night?
I see.
And everyone who happens to have that app on their phone, it just mixes them all in these, in the, in this thousand simulation thing.
I see. Yeah.
Or, you know, a million simulations in the blink of an eye and figures out who in that room.
Right.
And on that phone, you just dated everyone.
Everyone
that,
there.
You did simulations having sex with everyone in that room. And it figured out, like, who.
Well, so screw the simulations. Just save out the little sex clips for later, you know?
Berto always finds a loophole. Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us out there. Please take care of yourself, and hopefully you'll find your 99.8% match. This podcast is a 99.8% match for you, I think. So so you've already won that one.
Hey, there's an ethical question there. If you forget the dating thing.
That'd be another thing. It's like you could simulate yourself listening to every podcast that existed.
And then tell you which one you like.
Yeah.
So imagine you could go into a bar and point your phone at someone and they have the same app or whatever, and it's called the My Life app or whatever. And the point is, it knows enough about us, and it's got all our imagery and stuff. It can generate a little porn of you and that person having sex. Is that ethical?
Well,
can we allow this?
If you click the I agree at the end. Then
well,
yeah.
You're right. But everyone has to agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that does it for that episode. Take care of yourself, because
you deserve it.